in this wilderness area, and probably true in others as well, but what I see is my mind changes. You know, I focus on what I'm doing at the time and forget about all that superfluous chatter that goes on in your head. And you kind of focus on the present, you know, and there's this wilderness area, and more than others, is has subtle beauty. It's not the Grand Canyon, for instance, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not Yosemite and El Capitan. It's a subtle beauty of lakes and sunsets and skies full of stars and loons calling and campfire activities and being with friends and taking time to just lay back, relax, and sit on a rock in your little comfortable chair, watching a family of loons swim by, and so many things that attract your attention, that keeps your mind occupied. That's what I find is so enticing about wilderness in general, but especially the Boundary Waters.
Hi, I'm Reet Singh, and this is Adventure Travel with Trip Outside, a podcast where we interview adventurers, local guides, and outdoor industry experts to uncover the best travel spots and human-powered adventures from around the globe. Before we jump in, I have a quick favor to ask you, that if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It would truly mean a lot. Well, welcome, Steve, to the Trip Outside podcast. We're super excited to have a Boundary Water Outfitters on our show today. Boundary Waters is a special place to us. It's one of the few places that Julie and I have been visiting for years, starting in about 2014. And we've been doing a summer trip there every single year. And it's a very special place to visit as an annual trip. And you guys are one of the oldest outfitters in the area, so we're just really excited to have you guys on for Piraguas Northwood. So welcome.
Well, thanks so much, Reese. Great to be with you. It's a beautiful day in winter, but we're looking forward to summer next year when the sun comes out and the ice melts and we're back on the water again. We'll see you then, I'm sure.
For sure. You're definitely looking forward to it early. You guys still got 9 months of winter there ahead of you.
I know. It starts to seem like that when the first snow comes in the middle of October, but that's the way it goes. We like winter too. Your Boundary Waters is beautiful in the winter, so don't discount that. But then spring is really my favorite season.
Yeah, that's when everyone's happy. You're out, things are melting, and you can start to see the silver lining.
Exactly.
Well, for those that don't know Boundary Waters, where is it? How long has this been a wilderness area? For the ones in areas that don't know about Minnesota and the number of lakes in the area, give us an idea of where Boundary Waters is in general and what are the access points to get to the wilderness and what are the different towns?
Sure. Well, the Boundary Waters has, of course, been around since the original Wilderness Act of 1964. It's one of the original 10 wildernesses that were designated, and a lot more since then, but it's 1.1 million acres was set aside. It's on the Canadian border, contiguous with the Quetico Provincial Park in Ontario, which is another million acres. So combined over 2 million acres of wilderness that's shared in kind of a very special geographic area and geologic area. The glaciers were nice enough to pass through here and carve out some of this really hard rock into about 1,000 lakes and left behind ridges and valleys that are filled with water. And we have contiguous lakes that probably one could paddle for or ski or snowshoe for the rest of their lives and never see, at least at my age, can never see them all because there's so many. There's there are people who like to go on trips every year like you do and mark their maps and show the lakes they've been on, but after 20 years there's still lots of lakes you haven't been on. So it's unique geographically, geomorphologically. There's no place really like it on the surface of the earth, where there's this many lakes in this small of an area on the edge of a boreal forest.
And such you asked interesting, about, unique way.
Go ahead.
Sorry, please go ahead. Please.
No, I was just going to say, you asked about entry points, and, you know, to get into the Boundary Waters, you need a permit any time of the year, but obviously very busy in the summer. And there are, just around our hometown of Ely, there's about 23 entry points. There are more on the other side. We have two sides to this wilderness. We kind of look at it as the east and west, and we're the west. We're the Ely entry points. And then to drive around to the other side, the Gunflint side of this beautiful park, it takes us about 3 hours to drive around to a place where you could probably paddle to in about a day and a half. But the Gunflint side is the eastern side. It's an access off the Gunflint Trail, and there's another 20 or so access points over there, entry points. So lots of ways to get into it, and Ely is sort of, you know, I think kind of in the center of it all, and we kind of consider ourselves the canoe capital of the world here.
Yeah. Yeah, there's over, 40-something outfitters in these combined areas, and the number of access points really helps. It never really feels crowded at any one of those places, which is incredible how spread out they've put these access points. So basically, if you're coming from, if you're traveling from out of state, your chances are you're probably going to come into Minneapolis, either fly in or now drive in and head up to the Duluth, general Duluth area, and then you're going to go either east or west, whether you go to Grand Marais or go west to Ely, and get most of the access to the Boundary Waters is through those two towns.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. A lot of our customers fly from all over the country. They either fly to Minneapolis and rent a car, or they fly to Duluth and we can arrange shuttles, or they rent a car from there. It's about 2 hours from Duluth to the Canadian border where we're located in Ely. So, it's perfect. Pretty accessible. It's one of the most popular wilderness areas in the country. I guess it is the most popular wilderness area in the country, with maybe about 80,000 permits given out every year. And, if there's four people in a permit, that's 240,000 people.
That's incredible.
Or is it three? Three people in a permit.
Because when you're in the middle of the summer, you can lose them really fast if you go far enough.
Yeah, it's the Forest Service does a great, the U.S. Forest Service, you know, administers this because it's part of Superior National Forest. So the Boundary Waters is well regulated. And for the last at least 30-something years that I've been here, or 40-something years I've been here, we haven't seen a situation where there's tremendous overcrowding in any one place. The Forest Service has designed the system so that you enter at a designated entry point that's based on your permit application. And once you're in, you're in. You can go wherever you want and camp, as long as you camp on one of the designated campsites. So it's not like you have to reserve a campsite. You just, you reserve an entry point. And from there, you're on your own. And, this was our busiest year ever. And because of the pandemic, people were seeking wilderness and seeking outdoor experiences. So we've never had a summer quite this busy in the Boundary Waters, and we managed to take on more customers and more wilderness travelers than we ever have in the past. And I think everybody had a great experience.
That's incredible, because if they, the Boundary Waters is a place that I feel like stays with us. The calm and peace and the truly being able to unplug is something that we love about it. And hopefully all of us find some of that peace, and, all of your stress, anxieties, and all the stuff kind of fall off when you're in there. You may have some you're so busy that you don't have time to really think, I feel like being in there, you can relax. But if you're paddling and setting up camp day after day, you're paddling, you're setting up camp, you're taking down camp, you're enjoying everything, that you don't really, miss anything about the city or your phone. Like, we go 4 days and not even check our phone, which is incredible. And I think you can say that for a lot of backcountry wilderness areas, but I feel like it's so different because you're on water, you're canoeing. It doesn't feel like a typical backpacking trip. And the portaging is such a unique experience. So if you're, never been to the Boundary Waters, is it something that anyone can do? Do you feel like a backpacking experience is required or necessary, or there's ways to do the boundary waters for even a beginner.
Oh, I think it's definitely a great place for beginners to learn about wilderness for their first trips, whether they're, you know, their first time, you know, as a student, as a Boy Scout or Girl Scout, or as an elder, you know, who's never done it before, because it's a user friendly place. As you know, I think of it as, you know, probably the easiest wilderness trip you could do, and still have that real feeling of being in a remote wild place. We've done a lot of backpacking and hiking and, you know, day hiking and backpacking in the mountains and spent a lot of time in the deserts. And, you know, it's each place has its unique and wonderful feel about it. But having a canoe and being able to take comfort items and not have to carry them very much. In fact, there are some entry points where you don't have to portage at all. But portaging is a beautiful part of the experience, really, because you get to see the land as well as the water. So that's an opportunity to see stuff that you don't see while you're paddling. We always take two trips on every portage because we take a lot of stuff and we like to be comfortable, and we don't mind walking the portages twice. So if there's a portage that's a half a mile long, you know, you end up walking it three times, right? Over, back, and back again. So you get a mile and a half walk in, and you get to see, you know, what's growing, what's in the woods, plants and birds and mushrooms and, you know, all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't see if you weren't portaging.
You know, next time I think we'll do the same on a few of the portages and slow down, at least in the first few days when your packs are still heavy with all the food. Slow down, enjoy the hiking part of it, because a lot of times we're just trying to, you know, power through the portages, because we're trying, you know, limited days, but we go as far in as possible to get to the remote places. But there's a lot of value to enjoying the hiking component of it. It's not just about the campsite and the canoeing. That's it. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. Maybe that Yeti cooler will come along next time.
Well, we did that this summer because we took a family trip with some friends who had three daughters, and the two of us and my wife and I, and we did a tow into, you can get a motorized tow into some of these more remote places on the edge of the boundary waters. One is up the Loon River into Lac La Croix. When Lac La Croix this year was much quieter than it's ever been because the Canadian side of the wilderness is closed. So, and that's on the Canadian border. So we had the whole lake to ourselves basically. And we took the motor tow. We didn't portage at all. And we had you mentioned it. We brought a Yeti cooler. So we had cold food and cream for our coffee every day, which was pretty nice. And we saw some beautiful campsites and caught a lot of fish and hiked a few portages just because we wanted to see what you could see off of Lac La Croix. So there's so many ways to enjoy the boundary waters without any portaging at all, or doing 12 portages a day for 6 days in a row if you want. You know, if you're young and hardy and you really want to do a major expedition, you can do it. It's just a different mindset.
How many years have you been going into the boundary waters? When did you start?
Gosh, you know, Nancy and I got here very luckily from New England in 1975. Seems like only yesterday to us, really, but it's a long time ago, I guess. And she and I were in grad school out at the University of New Hampshire studying zooplankton, of all things, and limnology. And we got a job here in Ely in for the summer as contractors with the EPA, with Environmental Protection Agency, that was doing a study on Shagawa Lake, which is the lake here right in town that had been a little polluted by the city of Ely over the century of mining that had gone on. And it was slowly cleaning itself up. And we did part of the work that was necessary for a mathematical model of the lake as it cleaned itself up. And we discovered Ely, not knowing anything about Minnesota or the North Woods or the boundary waters, and just got so lucky to end up right here on the edge of this great wilderness. Fell in love with it our first trip, and came back from New England again in 1976 to do more study on Chagua. And by the end of 1976, we were Ely residents.
Wow. So what was,
been here a long time.
Were they outfitters then, or were you one of the first outfitters? And how did you get started into starting Paragas?
No, we can't claim we're one of the first. There's been outfitters around, especially Ely, since the 20s. You know, this has been a destination for wilderness travel since the 1920s and probably earlier. But it's evolved to be, you know, major destination since then. And we started our outfitting business, our retail and our outfitting business in 1979. So we worked here on a couple of biologic projects for a few years and taught at the community college for a couple of years. And by 1979, we had a nice little house in town. We were enjoying and loving the Boundary Waters and loving this little town of Ely. And we just didn't have anything else to do. So I was interested in alternative energy. And I started selling wood stoves out of my garage. And along came a fellow who said, you know, you guys love the Boundary Waters. You ought to sell my line of canoes. So I said, yeah, canoes are a whole lot lighter than wood stoves. I'd rather sell canoes, to tell you the truth. And so we metamorphosed pretty quickly into a wilderness shop in downtown Ely. And over the last 41 years, we've kind of grown by accretion. You know, we keep adding on to our store by buying other pieces of property around us. And
so that's the original location?
To the point now.
That's a massive store that you have now.
Yeah, it's not the original location. No, we moved three times before we got here. I think that was about 82 by the time we got here and started buying the stores around us. And now we're going to build a new one across the street from us this next summer. We've kind of outgrown our outfitting division. It's a building. So part of that building was our outlet store. It's been a good business for us to have an outlet store. So we're going to build a new outlet store across the street from our original store and our original outfitting department and expand that business. So, you know, and we're not giving up. We're growing. We're still growing, I think. And my daughter has taken over a lot of the business. So we're leaving a legacy.
Oh, that's incredible. Keeping the family. That's refreshing to see, especially in this year of, you know, all these businesses closing, but people finding value in the outdoors and growing. And it's refreshing to know that, you know, you're doing something that's allowing people to allow, you know, love the wilderness, protect it, because we believe if you don't know it, you don't see it, and you're never going to sign that petition to stop the mining and all the environmental damage.
Yeah.
So being on the side of things that that is helping protect in the, you know, the environment and nature around there and still be able to make a living and grow is an incredible thing. So what was Boundary Waters like back then in 70s and when you first started going? Were there still designated campsites? Were you seeing more wildlife, less wildlife? Yeah. What are some of the big differences that you take us back in time?
Well, the major difference is there were more motorized routes back then. The Boundary Waters was a little bit smaller. Because there was in 1978, there was the Boundary Waters Wilderness Act passed. It was in 64, it was part of the wilderness, a group of wilderness areas in the United States. But it expanded in 78 with the Boundary Waters Wilderness Act. It took away some of what had been designated motorized routes and snowmobile routes that were within the wilderness. So, you know, it was a little bit different than some of the wilderness areas out west, which had banned all motorized use. And, I think Humphrey was, Senator Humphrey and Vice President Humphrey was part of this, the legislation that initially made the Boundary Waters. And he was kind of hoping to please everybody, you know, including some of the locals up here and the people in Minnesota who like to use motorboats. So, but by 78, a lot of that had been eliminated. The wilderness got a little bit bigger. It was a shift, I think, between seeing a lot of people with motorboats on Main Street in Ely to seeing almost everybody with a canoe on their roof. So there's no place in the world, I don't think, where you can go other than Ely, Minnesota, where you'll see more cars with canoes than cars without in on an August day.
Yeah, I love the whole rides too.
Yeah, you know, it is a unique culture here where people come out of the woods and talk about what they saw and, you know, what their campsites were like and what about the wind on Tuesday and, gosh, did you see that storm that brewed up Thursday afternoon? And, you know, so it's exciting to be here when you're amongst a group of maybe at one time, maybe 5,000 people are in the Boundary Waters at one time in this million acres of wilderness. And they all have stories to tell. And, you know, the thing that impresses me is that we've been here all these years and there's people been here longer than us. Mm-hmm. And these folks that are now, you know, I'm pushing almost 70, but we get some older folks than even old people like me who come in and say, yeah, I was here in 1948 when I was a Boy Scout. And, you know, they remember what lakes they were on and they remember the route that they took. And it's just such a memorable thing to people who have done it. It's, you know, you don't remember maybe where you lived in 1975 or 1965, but you remember the lakes you were on and, you know, you were carrying cans back then in Duluth packs, and that's changed, you know, since then, but it's still a beautiful wilderness. And one thing I've noticed too, Reed, is the trees grow bigger. You know, a lot of the Boundary Waters have been logged in the early 1900s and late 1800s. And since 1975, I think I noticed that these pine trees, especially the big white pines, have gotten bigger. I guess we would expect that, wouldn't we?
yeah, that's cool. Yeah, one day it could be, you know, the primary forest that initially was at some point.
Well, it takes a long time.
Close to it.
You know,
close to it.
Succession. Yeah, exactly.
We can protect it. So that had to be some of the heaviest packs and canoes you were moving around back then. The stoves, the fuel, the canoes were probably all aluminum.
Yeah.
You had to be a lot stronger back then.
Well, I was actually. You know, my dad was a boat dealer in Athol, Massachusetts. So he sent me out here with a Grumman canoe. He said, you're going to Ely, Minnesota. You got to have a canoe. And the summer of 1975, I drove my little Volvo out here with a Grumman canoe on the roof, not knowing what I was going to find. And, you know, I took a lot of back roads from Grand Marais to Ely. I thought I was in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden I pull into Ely. It's an oasis. You know, it's this town bustling with people on canoe trips. And I've got a canoe. So Nancy and I took off, I think, our second or third weekend we were in Ely after we got established with our research. And we did our first canoe trip into Hegman Lake, where there's some beautiful pictographs. And that was it. That was love at first sight.
Hey, you remember like it was yesterday, too. So it must be something about our first canoe trips that really stay with us.
Yeah, I remember I couldn't catch any fish. I don't know why, but it took me a while to figure out how to catch fish out here. But that's kind of a big part of the experience for us anyway, is having a meal of fresh walleyes or northern pike or, you know, bluegills or whatever it is you're catching. But we always bring the cast aluminum griddle and enough oil and batter so that we can always have a fish meal if we're lucky.
Yeah. Wow. The cast iron, you were definitely packing well. I'm taking a list of things to pack next time.
Yeah. Well, you know, a little bit of comfort's not such a bad thing. We take, you know, we didn't have these beautiful and cool lightweight chairs that, you know, kind of dominate the wilderness retail stores these days. And so now we're getting older, but we're getting a little more relaxed too. So,
glamping.
You know, I'm not sitting on a log every night. Yeah.
What are some of the, actually, that's a great question. What's some of the new gear that you really like? It doesn't have to be, you know, within the last couple of years, but what's some cool, I know Kevlar canoes are a big deal. You're enjoying.
You know, Kevlar canoes, of course, now weigh 40 pounds. And my old Grumman weighed 75. So I cut 35 pounds off really quick. Carbon fiber paddles was what we always use now these days, mm-hmm. instead of 72-inch long wooden paddles that we used to use in the 70s. So a little 52-inch long carbon paddle that weighs 7 or 8 ounces. You know, you gotta watch out so it doesn't blow away. You know, sleeping pads, what a difference. You know, we had what, white Ensolite pads back in the 70s that we slept on, and you know, they were about 1/2 inch thick, and you could feel every rock underneath you if there was any. And nowadays, there's, you know, self-inflating, like the Nemo pad that you can pump up with your foot. Yeah, you pump it up, it's 3 inches thick, and you feel like you're sleeping at home on, you know, and you're on your Serta sleeper. So that's been a big difference. Tents have evolved to become a lot lighter. I think we started out with something that probably weighed 12 pounds. And I mean, back in the 40s, of course, that when they were, Boy Scouts were using canvas tents, it weighed 20 pounds. And sure, our first nylon tent that we used was probably a Eureka Timberline, might have been 9 or 10 pounds. And now the tents are, you know, 4 or 5 pounds. So things have changed a lot. Everything's lighter, but that means we probably bring a little more fresh food and when we're not portaging, maybe a cooler and some frozen food and some, you know, real pleasures like cream in the coffee.
That's incredible.
We can't. Go
ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, it's funny how you make everything lighter, then you take something that's, you know, that's going to weigh, it's going to make up for some of what you saved by, you know, taking something you don't really need. But freeze dried food
human
is really.
Because I feel like,
right,
we do that
exactly. Yeah.
We work towards coming out with innovation that's supposed to make our jobs easier so we can work less, but we find a way to get busier than ever. With all the technology,
right,
you would think we would just be sitting back and robots would be doing everything, but we keep finding a way to do more and more.
Well, we need the exercise, buddy. You know, you and I both. So
sure.
Keeps us going. What, you know, so, picking up a 75-pound canoe is probably not good for anybody's back. And before that, wood canvas canoes that after a week maybe weighed 90 pounds. So everybody's a little healthier now, I think. They come out of the woods feeling better, and they go a little further with a little less work. But and you
a
see a little more wilderness
too,
because things are lighter. Yeah, exactly.
Getting in on those sketchy rocks, putting in and out, that could be tricky with a really heavy canoe.
Yeah, the landings are a challenge at times, and you know, you carry this canoe on your shoulders upside down, which maybe not everybody realizes how you portage a canoe. It took us a while to figure that out. You know, our first trip into Hegman, Nancy and I carried it upright on our shoulders, one on each end, and we saw a guy coming up the portage with this thing upside down on his head, and I said, "How do you do that? How'd you do that?" He says, "Well, there's a thing called a yoke that goes inside the canoe, and you pick up the canoe and put it on your shoulders upside down, and it looks like a big hat." And I said, "Well, I gotta get one of those, because I had never had one, and I didn't know, you know, in New England nobody portages." So we found out Minnesota has this wonderful technique of carrying a canoe on a upside down on a portage, and I called my dad, who was at his little shop in Athol, and said, "You know, Grumman's got something they call a yoke." And he said, "Gosh, I've had one of those on the shelf here for 25 years. Nobody's ever bought it. I'll send it to you."
Oh, that's great.
So it worked.
They call it canoe heads.
It worked.
You see a lot of canoe heads.
Canoe heads, yeah. But, well, you know, if it's raining, you're the guy that's dry. That's the only benefit, really.
And you typically find rain in the Boundary Waters. So if you're coming to the Boundary Waters, what are some things that Piragas can provide, or what do you need to pack on your own? Like, if you're listening to this, you're feeling super inspired to go take a trip, and you're like, "I don't have any backpacking gear," what are some things that you recommend you bring versus buy, or you can rent? You know, what are the levels of outfitting that you
there's soup to nuts. You know, a lot of people have gear, sleeping bags and tents, and they bring their own, and we supply everything else. A lot of times people just rent canoes from us because they don't have a $3,000 Kevlar canoe, and we have 140 of them to rent. So We do a lot of just canoe rentals, but what we call full outfitting out here is everything, basically, from, you know, sleeping gear and food and cookware and tents and the canoes and the paddles and all, everything that you would, a tarp, you know, because it's kind of nice on a rainy day to have a place to sit outside, and chairs if you want to take them. We offer everything. The only thing we don't provide in, with a full outfitting party is a water filter, because water filters tend to, you know, be used up over time. And we just, we invite our customers to buy their own, bring a water filter instead of us renting them one, and fishing gear. So, you know, fishing gear can be pretty basic. If you've never done it before and you want to do a canoe trip, it's not a bad idea to buy a license and just buy a cheap rod and reel. That we sell those combinations here in the store for $30 and a couple of Rapalas, and you know, that's, that'll get you going and probably catch you a lot of fish. So, so those are the things that we don't provide, but everything else, you know, whatever you need, if you want to rent a pack or just a sleeping bag, we'll do that too. But, a lot, if you're flying in from New England or if you're flying in from Florida or California, you're probably not going to want to bring too much with you. So I think we, as an outfitter, we have the, absolutely the best, the highest quality of every piece of gear that you can imagine. And we sell it all used at the end of every season. So we start next spring with brand new gear. The first guy rents in the, when you rent in May, when you're the first one here, you're going to have everything that's brand new, tents and sleeping bags and a canoe that has no scratches on it. It's a little intimidating, but most people get over it.
And that the first the quality scratch of the gear, bottom. That the high-end gear really adds up. If you're out to, you know, going out, if you're not sure you're getting into backpacking, you're not doing it all the time, the, you know, everything that you guys provide is probably a couple thousand dollars without the canoe even, you know.
Yeah, so
that's a good,
you know, backpackers,
you're just taking a trip.
And backpackers have, you know, generally smaller, lighter internal frame packs, and we use canoe packs, which are bigger, a little bulkier maybe, but easier to pack and easier to put into a canoe.
Yeah.
So you know, sometimes we'll say, I know you got, you know, a $300 backpack that you'd like to use, but really you're going to be much better off just taking one of our granite gear canoe packs that go in and out of a canoe so much more easily and are almost as comfortable, really. So just easier to pack, and food packs that are lined with foam so that they keep the food from overheating and staying cool. And, you know, it's just little things that make the Boundary Waters a little bit different than backpacking. And, and, you know, over experience that people have, they learn over a period of time what works and what doesn't work as well.
Sure. Yeah, I've got a Duluth pack. It makes a world of difference. So we've got some, like, we'll do some fire round. You probably questions you get all the time that we can kind of knock out. And, you know, audience is probably wondering, what's the best time to visit in terms of weather? And then two, for beating the crowds. What do you need to get started?
Sure.
Okay, I want to take this trip. And what do I need to do before I can just show up, because you need a permit? And what's the process of getting the permit?
Okay. Well, you know, the seasons, really the summer season starts here in May. Ice out, it happens usually at the end of April or the first week of May. So the water's cold. There's no bugs. It's the fishing season doesn't open until the middle of May. So that first week, there's not many people around, that's for sure. There are people that show up as soon as the ice goes out, and they, you know, they somehow keep track of it, and they're here the day the ice goes out. But really, the season gets underway, gets busy about the 1st of June.
Okay.
And that's a little bit of a buggy season. People, especially from Colorado, for some reason, those folks who don't like bugs try to avoid the month of June. But month of June is also the most active period of time for birds singing, flowers blooming. It's a beautiful time of the year. And if you choose a campsite on a point out in the breeze, the bugs won't be as big a problem as you might imagine.
Yep.
July, from about the 4th of July until the middle of August, that's our busiest season. Lots of Boy Scout groups and Girl Scout groups and lots of families and church groups, and permits are a little harder to get, but you know, it's also the warmest season time. There's good swimming. Sure. There's still good fishing. Things are mellow because it's midsummer and it's warm. And, you know, we do occasionally get a 90 degree day here, but a warm day in northern Minnesota is usually about 80 degrees, 75 to 85, somewhere in there. And that's a great time for kids, I think, and bringing families. And by the middle of August, things start to slow down a little bit. And towards Labor Day, we have a very busy weekend on Labor Day weekend. But right after Labor Day, it's relatively low key, less people, cooler water, obviously, and nice sleeping, you know, nights would get cool and beautiful time to be out. Things start to change as the leaves change in the end of September and into the middle of October. And basically, it's lights out about the 15th of October. Things start to freeze up here this year, especially. Okay. But yeah, that's the seasons. What do you have to know? You have to
winter.
We do winter. Yeah.
When does that start back? Like, what there's a date that gets announced that the ice is frozen or the lakes are frozen?
Yeah, we had people ice fishing here last week, but then we had 70 degrees this weekend, so that all ended. Mm-hmm. But we don't get snow that sticks around until the end of November, early December, and big lakes don't freeze until sometimes the middle of December. So if you want to be safe and do a winter trip, I mean, I think it's really from Christmas on till the middle of April. And, you know, cold, short days when you talk about December and January, we're pretty far north. So
a full episode on winter boundary waters trip.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a whole,
that would be a whole different story.
So got it. You know, best times to visit, avoid the mosquitoes in June, great weather in May, September, avoid the crowds in July and August, but great swimming time. So ready to go next year. You can still get a permit for 2021. When do the permits open? What's the best way of getting them? Do you get them through you, or do they have to go through government process?
Yeah, the Forest Service has a website, recreation.gov, that the Boundary Waters is part of that system for getting permits. This permit system opens at the end of January.
Okay.
So it's not open now for next year, but it will about the last week of January. And yeah, certainly keep track of it. And our website, paragus.com, we keep everybody informed of what's going on. But you know, you don't really need to get a permit on, you know, the first day the system opens. A lot of people do, but really there's plenty of permits available and lots of entry points available until, you know, into the summer. This year was exceptional because there were so many people demanding permits so early. But on a normal year, if you wanted to go out in the middle of July, I would think you'd want to have a permit sometime in April or May.
Okay.
And, you know, but if you decide last minute, you know, it's July 10th and you're thinking, maybe we'll go next weekend, and you look online, there's still probably going to be a few permits left. They might be the entry points where you have to take a portage right away to get into a lake. You know, there's not going to be drive up and put your boat in the water. It's not going to be like Lake One or Snowbank. It might be, you know, Angleworm, which involves a pretty long portage to get to the lake, but that's what's available. So start early, plan your trip, call an outfitter to help with what you need. And, you know, just, you got to stick to that entry date. So if you chose July 12th, that's the date. You got to be here, you know, July 11th or early on the 12th, because that's the only day that you're allowed to enter. After that, once you have that permit, you can basically, stay as long as you want, go wherever you want from that entry point and have fun.
Amazing. And then what's the difference in geographical areas between the West and East, or is it all pretty much similar? What's the, you know, if there's a trip where you want to see more wildlife, you can take that out of Ely or Grand Marais. Is there a preference in a difference in choosing your entry point and what you want to do? And how does one kind of decide?
We like to work with our customers and find out what they have in mind. Okay. Waterfalls, lots of portages, lots of lakes, a round trip kind of route where you enter and spend 6 days traveling and coming back. Wildlife is basically ubiquitous. You know, there's probably not a lot of places where there's any more or less wildlife. There's a chance of hearing wolves, maybe even seeing one or two. There's a chance of seeing bears, hopefully not in your camp, but you keep your camp clean and avoid bears. Always the opportunity to see a moose, mostly while you're paddling on a quiet stream somewhere is a good opportunity to see moose because they're in the water a lot in the summertime. Geomorphologically, no, there's not a lot of difference between the east and the west. Okay. There's just different routes, different, sure. Different amounts of time, different amounts of portages. Some people like our family group, our two families, we just go into a big lake and set up one or two campsites over the course of a week and travel, do day trips and really relax and fish a little bit and, enjoy the campsite and the conversation and do some hiking into other lakes or portaging into other lakes, but coming back to our campsite every night. So that's a different kind of trip than day in and day out foraging and finding new campsites and resetting up camp, which we also do. But, it just depends on individuals and what they had in mind and what they find enjoyable.
Perfect. So trip planning, you guys can reach out to Piragas, reach out to us. We have some other boundary water experts and outfitters. Basically, talk to your group, do a plan. The first thing is get the permit, know what kind of general area where you want to get into, and then start booking the gear that you need. And then trip planning comes next, where the outfitters can guide you through. Okay, you got 6 days. You want to do fishing. Here's some good spots along the way. Here's some good campsites. And you guys can really help guide that experience where there's not a ton of research involved beforehand. That's great. Perfect. No, Steve,
that's true.
So
there's
so much information here.
That's for sure. That's what we're here for. So, we have two guys who run our outfitting department. I'm always here with my wife and our daughter. So we're always willing to talk to people on the phone or by email, however you want, and figure out what would be a great boundary waters trip for you.
Thank you. I'd love to, one question that is personal is, what is something that you love about the boundary waters that's different from other wilderness areas? I know we've talked a lot about the wildlife and different things, but what do you get out of it personally every time you go in and come back out?
Sure. I always think about that, and it's almost subconscious, but when you're, at least in this wilderness area, and probably true in others as well, but what I see is my mind changes. I focus on what I'm doing at the time and forget about all that superfluous chatter that goes on in your head. And you kind of focus on the present, and there's this wilderness area, and more than others, has subtle beauty. It's not the Grand Canyon, for instance. It's not Yosemite and El Capitan. It's a subtle beauty of lakes and sunsets and skies full of stars and loons calling and campfire activities and being with friends and taking time to just lay back, relax, and sit on a rock in your little comfortable chair watching a family of loons swim by, and so many things that attract your attention, that keeps your mind occupied. That's what I find is so enticing about wilderness in general, but especially the boundary waters. And I hope other people feel that too. I think they do. You know, most people, it takes them a day or two to relax, to get into that mindset. Mm-hmm. And then doggone it, on about the day that you're going to come out, it's so strange, but you start thinking about the outside world again, don't you? I mean, it's like, oh no, what did I, well, why are we doing this? You know, or you start thinking about, you know, that your first stop for a cheeseburger and fries, but that's okay too, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think you said it so well about all the things that we love about it too. The presence, the appreciating the small things and the subtle beauty of Boundary Waters. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. We love the Boundary Waters. We want to share this with everyone to hopefully inspire them to take a trip, go out there. If you're not comfortable with a full 5-day trip with lots of backpacking and portaging, you can go for a day trip. But, you know, go up there, explore the Boundary Waters. You find Piragas on tripoutside.com or reach out to them. Thank you, Steve, for coming on. And I hope you have some time to unwind from this busy year. And we'll see you next year.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Hey there, adventure seekers. Thank you for listening to another episode of Adventure Travel with Trip Outside. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share it with your friends, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to stay up to date on where we travel to next. If you felt inspired to travel, go to tripoutside.com. It's the fastest way to book outdoor adventures all in one place.